Your Holiness, on behalf of all of us here, we welcome you back to Tucson. Last time you were here, you gave commentary on Shantideva's 8th chapter on patience. Well, we have learned some patience because we have waited 13 years for you to return. On the one hand, sometimes it has seemed like a long time. On the other hand, I see so many faces out here who were with us in 1993. So it is a family gathering again of old friends and old students and some new as well. So we welcome you. We are happy, delighted, and of course very blessed to have you here. And we wish you long and healthy life so that you may do this for many more years, as long as we don't tire you out too much.
First of all, I would like to extend my greetings to all of you. As Claude mentioned in his opening remarks that and this is a kind of reunion, a gathering of many old friends. So we had this opportunity once again. So it seems the hall this time is larger than the last one, and perhaps there are more people as well.
So as you mentioned, 13 years passed. So during that period, I myself I think a physical level, a few occasion illness also happened. Spent is a few days in hospital, and also I think a few months rest, such experience also happened. Then mentally, of course, not much progress. But I always make sort of attempt or effort to improve myself, mainly through bodhicitta, infinite altruism, and understanding about ultimate reality, as Buddhists call emptiness or shunya. Or
Ultimate reality in terms of understanding of dependent origination is probably a better way of putting it. Because sometimes the term emptiness can have lead to misunderstanding. So just as the past masters would say, the wonder of the ultimate reality, which is the dependent origination.
So I think compare 13 years ago, perhaps I think some experience, little experience, but very useful. I think I want to just to share with you one my experience. A few years ago at Buddh Gaya, I developed some very, very painful the illness in
intestine.
Very, very painful. But that time, because I passing through round Patna, the Bihar state, one of the poorest Indian state. So that time when I passing through different area, I saw a lot of poor people, especially poor children. And then naturally some kind of sense of concern about this. I cannot do anything, but some kind of really feeling of them. Then particularly one old person at Patna, when I returned from one place to Patna, the hotel where I'm going to stay. Really, very painful.
The physical pain was quite intense. In fact, I was sweating and I had to sort of, couch myself like this.
Then during the night, of course, on bed, I cannot lay down properly, but it remained like that, very painful. But in my mind, they constantly sort of reflect those poor people, especially those one old, seems to see sick. Nobody look after that person. So then I feel, oh, same, that person, me, sick person. But at least me, there are people who are taking care. That poor person seems to nobody. Perhaps some mosquito may take care. Otherwise, it's no one. So the reflection in my mind is out of sense of concern. Or in other words, the buddhicitta practice, as a buddhicitta practitioner. So it's that immense help, you see, to reduce my physical illness. So therefore, since then I proudly telling to people, practice of compassion is the most beneficial to oneself. Whether you see the practice of compassion, whether benefit to other or not, that's a different question. Depend on other people also, other sentient beings also. Look, you see, Buddha and Buddhisattvas, you see, I think they had the
and they have gained the highest realizations of spiritual levels, but we didn't benefit.
Their practice of their buddhicitta, they experienced the
highest level.
The highest level, but it seems not much effect on us. Isn't it? So one individual's sort of practice of compassion not necessarily help to other, but to oneself, immense benefit. So therefore, Lama Tsongkhapa stated, Sambhashandra Sanni Rangdu Shalandu said.
So just as Tsongkhapa states that although one dedicates one's thoughts for the benefit of others, in the process one also gains a benefit for oneself as a byproduct.
So, there's within last 13 years one experience. So I think similarly, I think the old Dharma friends, I think many of you certainly, having deeper spiritual experiences. So if anyone gain a better experience than teacher, then me as a teacher, I may feel jealousy. anyway, I'm very happy we gathered once more. Now the purpose of our gathering, not for money, not for fame, not for just mere knowledge, and not for some other entertainment, right?
Entertainment.
Or entertainment which sacrifices our sleep. not that kind of entertainment. our purpose is reflect our mind constantly, right? And watch what kind of me, what kind of person, what kind of self. Although everybody or all sentient beings want happy life, successful life, and it is all right, basic right, but mostly they say look outward and try to seek some benefit from externally. But there is limitation. So I think unlimited resources of happy life, I think, within ourselves. So in order to aware that the reflection aware, our inner value, inner word is necessary. So now next 3 days we are going to discuss about the potential of our inner world. Inner world. So, Tanya, Tanya, the Jinju, Liu Jiaba, Manasama Kudu Shivi, Nanya, the Chance of Kenya, the Kenya Brother. In the end, Savagashi, Chishananda, Chishunji, Kokuyarcha, Chishune, Pandora Mandra, sometimes.
So, before we plunge into the actual reading of the text, which is the 8th chapter of Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, I feel that although majority of you might already be familiar, but there might be some who are new. So perhaps it would be beneficial at the beginning to give a kind of an overview of the context of this teaching and practice. And of course, in order to introduce Shantideva's text, Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, one also requires a little introduction to the basic teachings of the Buddha.
That's how long can say it, and then Sanjum Dindig that Chedi Zamunitigalta under your day, that Chulu Mongucha Tunday, Chulu Mongucha Nangi, that Chulu Kashi Chadiore.
As you are all aware, Buddhism is one of the major world religions that exist today. So when the Buddha gave the public sermon first, as known as the first turning of the wheel of the Dharma, the main theme upon which the Buddha taught was the teachings of the Four Noble Truths. So this is the foundation of the Buddha's teachings.
And the Tambashi Sundu Sane, dingshin mool ndarashin, dambashi sayate ngunzi. Tene, tese nyibati, ane, dungne shevarcha, kunjung paunarcha, ngobongurcha, namkomarcha asheni, chawal ndarashayachi. Chawal ndarashayategi, da dambashi di, teliyachi, paunar, jukdo kandashayawarayas, da disungi. Tene di shukute, and Dambashi, Palan, Jukto, Cheve, Devukarim Grislavna, and to Meshavas the Sheva Chamber, Guzupans the Palan Chamber, and Sunya Digi, and Dumjit Sungiwe.
So if you look at the way in which Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths in the first turning of the wheel of Dharma, the first public sermon, we recognize that there are actually three sets of teachings in that. Sermon. In the first set, Buddha makes the statement: "This is the truth of suffering, and this is the truth of the origin of suffering. This is the truth of its cessation, and this is the truth of the path that leads to the cessation." So, in this first set of statements, Buddha is identifying what are the fundamental truths of existence. And then, in the second set, Buddha says that suffering must be recognized and understood, and its cessation must be brought to an end. Sorry, its origin must be brought to an end, and so on. So, in this second set of statements, Buddha teaches us what are the specific functions of these Four Noble Truths, and how can we apply these truths into our own practice. And in the third set of teachings, Buddha states that although suffering must be understood, but there is no suffering to be understood. So in this set of statements, Buddha is teaching us what are the fruits and the results of practicing or applying the truth of these Four Noble Truths. So, from another point of view, we can say that in the first set of statements, by identifying what are the truths of our existence, the Four Noble Truths, Buddha is presenting us an understanding of the basic nature of reality, what kind of outlook on reality that we must adopt. And in the second set of statements, where Buddha explains when he explains the functions of the Four Noble Truths, he's explaining us, showing us a process by which we can incorporate that knowledge into ourselves and apply it. So, in other words, he's teaching us the systematic path through which we can embody those knowledges. And in the third set of statements, he's explaining to us how can that knowledge, as a result of engaging in the practice, can come into fruition, and what kind of results this will lead to. So in other words, we can see in this set of teachings what we refer to as the basis and the path and the fruits.
Ta shimuru ne sundu sane ta da ngel dislam yo do ta ba shis sane sung go ya de gares lam na sanje be che ge sa ye du de de ten ju sa de ma re ju de ten ju ten ju li ya ta mu cha chen ji ma re ta pe shi kasur bge duje dendres chen dundre ge denju jikche a ta dene ta de umare lu chen chebe na da umare lu chen ta denjung khwa da ba ta chebe chen chebe du sa ne ane a dundre ge denjung sa che de na ba yong zo long de ya che ta dene du du denjung de ne da ge denjung sa che
So the question is, what is the significance of the teachings of the Four Noble Truths? Why did Buddha give the teachings of the Four Noble Truths in the first public sermon? Here, what it suggests is the recognition of the basic philosophy or a basic outlook of the Buddha, which is the recognition of the dependent origination of all things. And when we speak of dependent origination, which is really the foundational philosophical idea of the Buddha's teachings, generally one understands the dependent origination in terms of dependence of causes and effects. However, from the point of view of the Madhyamaka philosophy, the middle way philosophy, where we see a kind of a much more profound understanding of the meaning of dependent origination, there is also an understanding of dependence, not just in terms of origination from causes and conditions, but also dependence in terms of the interrelatedness of concepts and their understanding. So in this context, the term is not just dependent origination, but also dependent designation. So the middle way philosophers distinguish between dependence in terms of origination of causes and conditions, but also dependence in terms of conventions and the labels and the designations and so on. And here, dependence may be understood in terms of dependence upon the various factors and the parts that constitute the whole, or dependence in terms of language, concepts, and so on. So within these two levels of understanding of dependent origination in terms of causes and conditions, origination from causes and conditions is a concept that is universal to all schools of Buddhism, and it is in this context we have to understand the significance of the teaching of the Four Noble Truths. So when we view the teachings of the Four Noble Truths from that perspective, we come to understand that the underlying the teachings of the Four Noble Truths is the recognition of the law of causality. So here, and not only that, but also the teachings directly pertain to our own pursuits of happiness and our aspiration to overcome suffering. So suffering is that something that we all naturally and instinctively wish to avoid, and happiness is something that we all instinctively and naturally aspire to attain. So with relation to suffering, the Buddha identifies a cause and its origin. So there is a cause and effect in the context of suffering. And similarly, the happiness that we aspire for is a happiness that is the freedom from suffering. And with relation to that happiness, which is the freedom from suffering, again Buddha teaches two of the Four Noble Truths, where again he identifies what is the cause for the attainment of that freedom, and what is the fruition of that process. So although the cessation itself is not a fruit in the sense of dependently originated, but because it is a fruit or it is a result that one arrives at as a consequence of an effort, therefore it is referred to as the fruit, and the path that brings about that fruition, cessation, is the cause that leads to it. So what we see in the teachings of the Four Noble Truths are two sets of cause and effects. Cause and effect relating, pertaining to suffering, and cause and effect pertaining to the overcoming of that suffering and attainment of true freedom.
Chanda tene dungye suzane chowa dungye sesabdo ma sebe chowa dungye ki tenshinye genshinye ta di samalol dukjin su shengu yore en zoo zoo dungye liya dungye ju dungye, yue dungye, dushi ju dungye sa sumsung wa ta sanjebe antude kaya chimbushin sungde ayde dushi ju dungye sumgu yore.
So when we speak of suffering in the context of the Four Noble Truths, of course we are not referring simply to the manifest levels of physical painful sensations, but also we are referring to suffering and the many conditions that bring about that experience of pain. So there is a much broader understanding of the meaning of suffering. Therefore, in the Buddhist text, one speaks of three types of suffering, three kinds of suffering: the manifest, evident suffering, and sufferings of change, and suffering of conditioning. And in the context of the Buddhist practice, the understanding the nature of suffering that is most important is the third level of suffering, which is the suffering of conditioning.
So that dungye sumba di yao shaya liya dewe dui shangwa jayinba di ta shegu duwa.
And in order to have a deeper understanding of the meaning of the third level of suffering, one needs to understand how all the results are in some sense entirely contingent upon their causes and conditions, how they are under the power of their causes and conditions. So then the question is, you know, what are the causes and conditions that bring about the suffering that we do not desire? So here Buddha talks about the origin of suffering, which is the second truth. So within this category of origin of suffering, although one speaks of karma as constituting one of the origins, but most important origin of suffering really are the afflictions, the kleshas. And the reason why afflictions are the more important origin of suffering is because even though the individual may not have specific karmas, but if the individual still possesses these afflictions always has the potential to create new karmas, which will then bring about the cyclic existence. On the other hand, if the individual, although may possess karma, past karma. For example, an individual who may be engaging in a practice of purification of negativity. And if that purification practice is very successful, it neutralizes
the potency. So
for example, those who engage in powerful practices of cultivation of bodhicitta, the awakening mind, or meditation on emptiness, and these are very powerful antidotes and referred to as the power of eradication or eradicating power. So through these application of these powerful antidotes, an individual may be able to really neutralize the potency of many karma. But at the same time, so long as that individual possesses these afflictions will give rise to new karma. They will create new karma. But on the other hand, if the individual is free of afflictions, then even though he or she may possess past karma, but these past karma simply wouldn't have the ability to bring about their consequences, their results. So therefore, between karma and afflictions, affliction is thought to be the more important origin of suffering.
但人物具以想望这件事的根源是什么呢?
Now the question is, in what sense are the results under the power of their causes?
等于等不送的时候呢，他本来定等不起来呀，开始定起来了呀，开始实行，开始居住，送的话，当然这些东西等不送的时候呢，没到话才是通过的送过来的，没到话，多年话，那你当然了，这种啊，定那个什么东西啊，当没到话是要的，拉关没到话，允许被习惯，拉关没到话。
So now to reflect more deeply upon the question of in what sense the results are under the power of their causes and conditions, here we can reflect upon the various characteristics that the Buddha mentions with regard to the Four Noble Truths. For example, with relation to the Four Noble Truths, each of them are described in terms of their four characteristics. So there are altogether 16 aspects of the Four Noble Truths. So with relation to suffering, Buddha speaks of four primary characteristics of the suffering, which are impermanence, suffering or dukkha, dissatisfaction, impermanence, dissatisfaction, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, emptiness, and no self. So, and of these, the understanding of the impermanence is very critical. And when we speak of impermanent nature of suffering, one must recognize that there are two levels of understanding of impermanence. Impermanence on a gross level, where we see an end of something, an end of an event, which is a certain event coming into being and then, you know, coming to cease. So that's the grosser level of impermanence, where impermanence is understood in terms of an ending of its continuity, whereas there is a subtle level of impermanence where impermanence is understood in terms of moment by moment change.
嗯，这样子的，特别是寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静的时候，寂静 매대디 미다고직 셰기아레 다 매다고직디 띠지 당부 릉귤레 안데 시기와 말디 지그 던이도 두드와 마대바 말디 미드고 차디아다 시기와 말디 지그 직심베이 말 자 어다디 직심베디 가르쳐버렸으려나 계지 욕하랑 저기 말이에요
So this understanding the subtle meaning of impermanence is very crucial. So when we look at, for example, an event, say two instances or two moments of an event, so the fact that the first moment comes to an end and moves on to the second moment. That's one way in which we can understand the transition or the transitory nature of that event. However, we can also go deeper than that, where even the first moment, a first instance itself, while it is still present, it's in the process of cessation. So it's not just it's good. It has come when the second instance arises. The first instance has ceased. It is not just that, but also while the first moment is present, it is in the process of cessation. So this is a subtler form of understanding of impermanence. And now the question is, what is the factor that propels that movement? What is the factor that makes the first instance, while it is present, to be in the process of cessation? And here, the only factor that makes that is the very cause that brought about the origination of that event.
자상아, 제입니다. 모직스 수자네 제슬럽 주자네 규진지 제발에 수 둘어 아다 미다슬럽도 가합니다. 제가 그지 모직스 수자네 깨이신 뉘이신 제발 거라 집에 다니도 되겠지.
Because of this, in the text we find statements that the production of an event and impermanence of an event are of the same nature. So what this suggests, for example, when we say something is produced, something is a product, here we are looking at that event from the point of view of a particular cause producing that event. So from the point of view of its origination, we call it a product. But because it is in the process of cessation, we call it impermanent. And therefore, both the impermanent and the product are of the same nature.
다 믿어 서로 죽어. 죽어 다 죽어지거든. 균형.
So here what we see is a coming into being of something and the cessation of something are simultaneous in some sense.
다리 강도 잡아서는 규지셔서.
So what brings about this simultaneity of origination and cessation? It is the cause. And because of this, everything is stated to be under the power of their causes. So when the cause and effect relationship that has been taught in the Four Noble Truths are elaborated upon, then the teachings of the 12 links of dependent origination arises. So on the teachings on the 12 links of dependent origination, there are two sets. One is a sequential process where there's a teaching on the 12 links with relation to an individual taking birth in a cyclic existence. And there is another set of teachings on the 12 links of origination where it pertains to an individual bringing about an end to the cycle of the 12 chains. So in the case of the cause and effect with relation to individuals taking birth in the cyclic existence, one speaks of ignorance as the first member of that chain. So what this suggests to us is that our very existence is under the power of ignorance. So whether it is in relation to the external world of samsara or whether it is in relation to the internal world of sentient beings, in both these cases, they are... Samsaric sentient beings. So whether it is the external world of samsara itself or the internal world of samsaric beings, in both of these cases, you know, they are under the power of ignorance, because they both arise from ignorance as a cause. So this is how we understand the relationship between the suffering and its origin. So what this points us is to the recognition that at the root of all of this is this fundamental ignorance, avidya, marikpa. So then the question is, what is this marikpa? What is this ignorance? What is its nature? Generally speaking, of course, there can be many instances of ignorance. Ignorance of this or ignorance of that. And in some sense, by going to school and you know, being educated, we are trying to remove layers of ignorance. Similarly, as we grow up and, you know, get older, through experience, we are able to remove layers of ignorance as well. So those who are elders, the senior citizens, you should not feel that we are old, but rather you should feel that we are wise and experienced.
Less ignorance.
So however, the ignorance that we are concerned with here in this context is the form of ignorance which is not only a distorted state of mind, but it also has a destructive potential, something that leads to destructive consequences or harmful consequences. Of course, in the Buddhist text, there are different interpretations of what that state of mind is. In some texts, this fundamental ignorance is defined, characterized as a mere state of unknowing. But of course, there are others, texts, interpretations, which probably are more effective, which understands this ignorance to be an active state of misknowing rather than a mere unknowing. So since the fundamental ignorance that is at the root of the samsaric existence is an active state of misknowing the nature of reality, therefore it is it involves a distortion of reality. It becomes important in order to identify the ignorance to have an understanding of what is the ultimate nature of reality.
다음 이루 컨트롤에서 라베이나 다 이루 소야리아 아니 좀 된다 랑게 다 뒤제 감도 나반 나 좀 된다 능이 전다 나라리아 감도 나반 나서 이봐 온부 뒤 다 온부 서로 다 온부 놀려다 근데 이게 다 감도 나봐 감도 내에 차발에 좀 된다 이게 만들어
송도 So on the question of how do we understand this ultimate nature of reality? What is this, you know, ultimate truth about things? Here, the Buddha himself, in his teachings, made different presentations, taking into account the diversity of inclinations, temperament, and mental faculties. So we find diversity of teachings in the Buddha's own teachings on the question of what is the ultimate nature of reality.
쿠쿠오보네 강사코 송비자네 가서 우리 그게 쿠 풍풍날레 시엠베 쿠 쿠경기 강사지 예반라고 지금 까동도 와.
For example, in some statements of the Buddha, in the sutras, there are statements where he says that the five aggregates, the five psychophysical constituents. Are the burden, and the person is the carrier of that burden. So, which seems to imply, suggest that you know, apart from the five psychophysical aggregates, the skandhas, there is something called a person who is independent and who carries that burden.
So,
So therefore, among some followers of the Buddha, particularly among some divisions of Vaibhashika school, and they were Buddhists who of course reject the notion of independent, eternal self, but at the same time are reluctant to totally embrace the notion of no self and speak about the teachings of no self, but rather they posit the notion of inexpressible self. But in a way it's quite good, because when you say inexpressible self,
That is, yeah, dokhaji naloriya, ane pungbuyu kansame desungdoya.
And in some sutras, Buddha makes the statement: the skandhas, the five psychophysical aggregates, exist, but person does not.
Then when Shivanimbu nalchashana, Shivanimbu tabu nalchashana, ane pungbuabat da jangrul hitamalamyando shu dao pungbuabat yediye moni chuya mar sungdo.
And then in some scriptures, such as the Heart Sutra, we find statements that even the five aggregates too do not exist by means of intrinsic nature. So, and one must view them as devoid of intrinsic reality. So because of this, from among the followers of the Buddha, from a philosophical point of view, we find four major schools of classical Buddhism. And all of these have the Buddha's statements as the basis of their philosophical standpoints. I feel that it is very important to appreciate this point, that you know, the diversity of the teachings Buddha taught, which brings home the point that regardless of whatever may be the truth about the ultimate nature of reality, Buddha felt the need to teach differently, in tune with the diverse needs and spiritual temperaments and philosophical bent of mind of his followers. So the fact that he felt the need to teach these different teachings is an important point that we need to appreciate.
这个东明这个就是当你，哎，你，呃，铁矿那你当了后，你就咋呢？跟那汤米的，哎，你卤煮你个，要熟熟熟熟，这下面来叫你就咋呢？跟汤米个，哎，你卤煮大碗，哈喇们就吃大碗的啥？就那个意思呀，不多。So
among the interpretations, by following or emphasizing different sutras, scriptures attributed to the Buddha, we find different interpretations. For example, between Asanga, Indian master Asanga, and Nagarjuna, and sometimes Asanga, for example, based upon his interpretation of the Buddha's scriptures, sometimes characterize Nagarjuna's understanding as constituting. So Asanga, when he takes a particular sutra as the primary basis of his understanding, and you know, when compared to the literal reading of that scripture, then he sometimes characterizes Nagarjuna's interpretation as constituting a form of nihilism. So, of course, what we find here is that different teachings were taught by the Buddha. So when you are able to appreciate this point about the diversity that exists in the Buddha's own teachings and their significance, because of the need of the diversity of sentient beings, then I feel this is very significant, because we will then be able to extend that same reasoning to other spiritual traditions that exist in the world. For example, in the world we have such diverse spiritual teachings. Some of them are theistic, some of them are non-theistic, some of them propound a notion of an eternal, unchanging soul, some of them do not, and so on. So when you see the diversity of the spiritual teachings that in the world, then you will, you know, if you have the appreciation of the diversity in the Buddha's own teaching, then you will be able to appreciate this greater diversity and really feel that, yes, of course, given the tremendous diversity among sentient beings in terms of their mental dispositions, spiritual inclinations, and so on, of course, we will need all of these diversity of teachings.
So
So, therefore, with relation to this understanding the nature of ignorance, earlier I mentioned that because it pertains to our understanding of the ultimate nature of reality and the distortion that we create, the question of understanding the ultimate nature of reality becomes crucial. And with relation to this, due to the different interpretations of the ultimate nature of reality, they evolved in classical Indian Buddhism, four main schools of Indian Buddhism, and within these four main schools of Buddhism, from a philosophical perspective, one can speak of lower schools and higher schools, and the criterion upon which this determination of the lower and higher schools is made is to what extent the philosophical standpoints of a particular school is in consonant with reason and with logic. So, for example, if you view the mind-only school's tenets from the point of view of Madhyamaka, the middle way philosophy, you will find a lot of inconsistencies and contradictions. And if these contradictions and inconsistencies were pointed out by means of reasoning and critical analysis, then from the point of view of the mind-only school, what we find is a revelation of internal inconsistencies. So it is on the basis of reason one makes the determination that some schools are higher and some schools are lower from a philosophical point of view.
So, 드리드르 따에 집어 마냐 매진 걸 남점 전진의 예배 쉐직 샤윤드 산에 그게 뭐니 예 전진의 예배 즉 샤윤드 드리 산에 집어 계속도 와 다체 담제 민점 다점 또배 다점 마도 전진 뭐냐 저거 때내미 나는 남대바 남대바 딘능식 나도 저거 때내미 산에 코다 최대는 얘기 로디 로디 집어 마냐 매진 걸
But more importantly, we can make the determination. But more importantly, we can make the determination of which is a more profound view on the basis of one's own understanding and experience. For example, while reflecting upon the teachings on the no self and the negation of the idea that independent of our physical and mental faculties, there is an independent self that is in some sense unitary, eternal and unchanging. That rejection of that notion of self, as you reflect deeply upon this teaching on no self, one can gain an ascertainment of this the truth. One can be deeply convinced of this truth, of the absence of such a selfhood, and have a deep ascertainment of this truth. But while this ascertainment, this understanding lasts, at the same time, while this understanding lasts, while the potency of that insight lasts, there is still the possibility from the corner of the mind to believe in the substantial reality of the aggregates, such as the physical and the mental faculties. So, similarly, while reflecting deeply upon the teaching that there is no such thing as independent self, So in other words, although one may have the insight that there is no self that is independent of, sorry, there is no self that is unitary, unchanging, and independent, at the same time, there is the possibility of grasping onto a self that is in some sense substantially real. However, as you deepen your understanding of the no-self and reject even this substantial reality of self, there is still the potential for believing or grasping at the substantial reality of the aggregates, that somehow the physical and the mental faculties may be real. However, by reflecting deeply upon the mind-only school's teaching on emptiness, which is the non-duality of the subject and the object, one is able to dissolve the objective reality of the external world of matter. So while being deeply convinced of that truth and gaining an ascertainment and insight into this truth, but there is still a room for grasping at the substantial reality of the experience itself, the internal world of consciousness. Then using the Madhyamaka reasoning, the middle way philosophy reasoning, which reveals that not only the external world of matter, but even the mental world of experience and consciousness too are devoid of any substantial reality. In other words, all phenomena, whether external or internal, are devoid of substantial reality. So by reflecting deeply upon this, one can gain a deep sense of conviction and also ascertainment of that truth. Still, there is a room for grasping that still there is a room for grasping in the fact that when we experience the world, there is a level of experience, and so therefore there is some degree of objectivity to the world that we experience. So there will be a basis for grasping onto something. So from therefore, even within the Madhyamaka school, there is a subtler understanding of the ultimate nature of reality. So the point is that when you attain the deepest level of understanding of ultimate nature of reality, there will be no object or there will be no locus remaining that can be grasped at as a basis of your clinging. So in other words, the higher the understanding of the ultimate nature of reality, the deeper your understanding of the ultimate nature of reality, the lesser the potential for grasping. Whereas compared to that, the lower the understanding of the ultimate nature of reality, the greater the room for more further grasping. So it is on the basis of this kind of understanding relating to one's own personal experience, one can make a determination that this level of understanding of ultimate reality is more profound than that level of understanding, and so on. So it is with relation to understanding the nature of ignorance, the fundamental ignorance, that the various philosophical teachings of the Buddha came into being. And so it is in the pursuit of the understanding of the deeper nature of reality that these diverse philosophical views originated. And here, as I pointed out earlier, by relating to one's own experience and understanding, one can come to a recognition that the highest understanding or the deepest understanding of the ultimate nature of reality is the understanding of emptiness in terms of emptiness of intrinsic existence of everything. So when we speak about the emptiness of inherent existence of everything, we are not talking about the simple fact that nothing is there. We're not talking about non-existence. And also, we're not simply referring to the fact that things and events, if we were to try to search for them, search for their essence, we cannot find them. And this unfindability is also not the final truth. But what this unfindability, when we subject them to critical analysis, suggests is that they do not possess a mode of being that is objectively real and that has some kind of intrinsic reality. Therefore, their mode of existence, then the question is, how can we understand their mode of existence? So their mode of existence can only be understood in terms of dependent nature, in terms of dependent origination, and also in terms of dependent designations, the interrelatedness of concepts. So because of this, in the Buddhist texts, we speak of the ultimate nature as the emptiness as being identical to dependent origination. So the true understanding of emptiness must take place in the form of or in terms of understanding of dependent origination. So because of this, when a person who has a very deep understanding of emptiness listens to the term emptiness, instead of conjuring an image of nothingness, one will in fact get a sense of fullness, because the emptiness implies the dependent nature of everything. Therefore, to the ear of someone who has a deep understanding of emptiness, the term emptiness will convey a sense of fullness.
这个能行动，动行动，能动你所是来的。
So therefore, we speak of the coming together or the union of appearance and emptiness. While things are devoid of intrinsic nature, they do appear in their specificity. And while things and events possess their appearance with a specificity, at the same time, they are devoid of objective, independent or intrinsic reality. Therefore, one speaks of the union of appearance and emptiness.
等于都上课运动的，等于差不多，是吧？等于差不多的，记录了也不行多啊。第一，记得三百人心，成了准备多啊。可记录的准备，记录的心这个有的三百多啊。反正我不了，我听你了，我大大的多少得了记录，大概就落实也不行多啊。所以这里头个老师也没写多的，老师没写多啊，老师没写多的啥呢？ 哎，还是我的不给。记录逻辑呢？得了可对呢，可我们那时候打，给人家下的是啥呢？可我们那时候点不的药了，可可对呢，我们那时候点不的先那个逻辑可对呢，可用错了的。刚才点不先那个逻辑，可用个药的人都，可记录了得了可对呢，干的就多啊。 但其他我刚才其他我人也觉得干掉了的爹妈的，那就看看的嘛，都先知道，得了，我吃了，吃了，我就引起下了，我成了，告诉我，天地引路的概念是怎么是一个差的个样的，怎么是一个老是引起下来呀？我天地引路，我不给我有那是独立了引路，第三个逻辑我明白的用不着的，在这里就是啥呢？我得了呀，你不要的，他成了。 但你不要的，对你不可能是什么呢？关键人当教的多，这咱们的去我不明白呀。这个这个这个，七八门这几个原因呢，我跟着啥用不要的，跟着有呢，就住的，跟着没得就住还没得吧。在这里，人就哪个落了呀？这个苏人那些钱，教子呀的要嘛的，这个人当教的呢，论教子就是论教，原因啥落了就住的，落了教没呢，论教着用嘛。
So when we have the appreciation of the need to cultivate a deeper understanding of reality, the ultimate nature of reality, we will then come to recognize that the fundamental ignorance that is at the root of our samsara existence is a distorted state of mind, because what it does is that it propels us to grasp at objective intrinsic reality of self and others. And once you have understood that the ultimate nature of reality is the emptiness of intrinsic existence of everything, then the mind that is grasping at the intrinsic existence of self and others and the world is really a form of distortion. And once you recognize that the fundamental ignorance is a distorted state of mind, then you will also come to recognize that there is an antidote to this. There is an opposition. There will be an opposition to this, because in principle there is the possibility of cultivating an insight that will directly penetrate into the deception or the delusion of this state of mind. Although whether or not such insight antidote exists in us as individuals is of course a different matter, but in principle that potential exists, that possibility exists. So the question is, why is this insight into the true nature of reality an antidote to this ignorance? Because they are directly opposite forces. So just as in the external world we see, in the physical world we see opposite forces, and you know, when you see two opposing forces, they counter each other, and because of these opposition of forces, we can also envision the possibility of a transformation and change. Similarly, in the mental world, once you recognize that ignorant, distorted mental states like ignorance has their own opposite forces and antidotes, where the ignorant and ignorance and the insight are directly opposite in the sense that they engage with the world, their object, in a totally opposite, diametrically opposed manner. And because of this opposition, we will come to recognize that within the world of emotions and thoughts, there are opposing forces, just as in the external world. And given that there are opposing forces and antidotes and their opposing forces, we will also come to recognize that there exist potential and possibility for inner transformation, you know, on the basis of recognizing how these forces operate. So, now when we speak about the internal world of experience and emotions and thoughts and their oppositions, opposing forces and so on, in the Buddhist texts we find mentions of 84,000 afflictions, and which sounds like a great amount of afflictions in us. But if you analyze this huge number of afflictions in us, they are generally classified under six root afflictions. And within the six root afflictions, one is the distorted view, which is further divided into five. So altogether there are ten root afflictions, five which are in the form of afflicted intelligence, and the other five are more non-cognitive nature. And since all of these ten afflictions ultimately rooted in the fundamental ignorance, in some sense they have their grounding in this fundamental ignorance. Therefore, in general, we can say that all forms of afflictions are a distorted state of mind, given that the fundamental root is a distorted state of mind. So all 84,000 afflictions which has arisen from this fundamental ignorance are in some sense distorted. A passage in Aryadeva's text is very helpful. For example, Aryadeva gives the analogy that just as all the sensory faculties, just as the sensory faculty of tactility, physical sensation, permeates the entire body, in the same manner, delusion, which is the ignorance here, permeates all afflictions. Aryadeva then goes on to say that after having identified that ignorance permeates all afflictions, he then says that he who sees the truth of dependent origination in him or her, the delusion, the ignorance, will not arise. So what he is suggesting here is that given that the ignorance pertains to the ignorance of the reality of things, the understanding of dependent origination, the truth of emptiness in terms of dependent origination, will then understanding of that will bring about the cessation.
No. So did you do it?
So then he goes on to state that therefore, with all your effort, you must first strive in the understanding of this truth of dependent origination. So Aryadeva's 400 verses, 400 stanzas on the middle way is written as a supplement to Nagarjuna's fundamental wisdom of the middle way. Because in Nagarjuna's own text, Mula Madhyamaka Tarika, which is fundamental wisdom of the middle way, there is no discussion of the actual stages of the path, the skillful aspects of the path, explicitly. Therefore, Aryadeva wrote his 400 verses as a supplement to Nagarjuna's text. And because of this, at the beginning of Aryadeva's text, there is no verse of salutation. So it is for us important when studying Nagarjuna's Mula Madhyamaka Karika, the fundamental wisdom of the middle way, to do that, to study it in conjunction with Aryadeva's text, Aryadeva's 400 verses. Therefore, I sometimes jokingly tell my colleagues and others that if you compare the writings of the great Indian masters of the past, for example, if you look at Vasubandhu's classic, treasury of higher knowledge, Abhidhamma Kosha, in the third chapter, I used to tell people that if Vasubandhu were to be alive today and writing that text, he would probably have to rewrite the third chapter of that text. Whereas if Nagarjuna and Aryadeva were to come today, and there would be hardly anything in their text that needs to be rewritten.
That third form of truth.
So, given this importance of understanding the nature of ignorance and how it conflicts with the insight into understanding the ultimate nature of reality, how this forms a distortion, it becomes very important then to understand the meaning of the third noble truth, which is the truth of cessation. So once one has one begins to engage in the cultivation of the understanding of the deeper nature of reality, the ultimate truth, here on the first stage one needs to study the texts and try to cultivate the knowledge based upon learning and study, and therefore the first level of understanding is the understanding derived through learning. And once you have gained a degree of understanding, then one needs to reflect deeply upon this understanding and try to internalize it to the point where you feel deeply convinced from the depth of your heart in the truth of this ultimate nature of reality. And on that basis, you will develop an ascertainment, an insight. And that level of understanding is referred to as understanding derived from reflection or contemplation. And again, on the basis of that, as you try to cultivate that familiarity and internalize that insight, gradually that understanding will culminate in the form of direct experience of that truth. And it is this direct experience of the truth which is the true path. And it is also this direct experience of the truth, ultimate nature of reality, that acts as the direct antidote to counter the fundamental ignorance. So it is this true path which then leads to the bringing about the end of that fundamental ignorance, which is the true cessation. So in this manner, we understand the cause and effect relationship between the path, the true path, and the true cessation.
So 대네 대길럽대 아기 나란즈 뉴주 다 시버코 대탐자로 머리베 샹와이 뭐 시에요나 다 지라도 나란즈 가소리 가소다 녀얼베 풍군디 녀얼 램바사기 민코라 레뉴인지 깨 레뉴기 땡칭에 냉에는 제순대대에 마음바다 레뉴 가소로 그게 자소 그게 다 깨하게 뺏기 다 퉁기는 조대에 뭐 근데도 저기야 녀얼로 풍부쓰기 아래 근데도 그 다 동해 코어젠 풍부쓰소하는 지신 근데도 그 다 녀얼 램베 풍부띠 레뉴기 샹왕쟁이 뭐 당신 머리베 샹왕이 뭐지도 스톰이나 다 머리베 샹왕 들으면 타워서 마셔봐 터미노 산들로지 게야 요구도가 그 용야도가 다들 이미 인도산에 따와 두지기 동해 동해도 시작할 때 백해진 거라시야 근데 인도인은 대무시한 놈이 다른 중에 나와도 농청 거래 다들 코엔 변신과 최경 숨지 세부도와 코엔 얘기가 샘배 추 망야 동해 동해기 진의 탐도 출랑이요. 사제 소화 대화래 인주 치료 발랑치. 대는 두지 정신기 멸을 내며 풍분디 동네 주장 주변에 내당 내당 대당 숨다르 민의 겁나 중요라 사다 대인 말이야. 도생다 동네 시벌사 사들이 숨도와. 다 대통령들 다 동네 사들이 싸워대. 동네 댕댕진기 묘목이 샹화제 띠무 댕진기 샹화제인 것이 또 통일도 자네 다 군중 싸워 띠무 댕진기 방국을 해 다 내 방국이 삼별로지 되기도 다 되는 민주수야 그러니까 민주 부수로 지 소수배 깬 차오로 지 전세 당마 최식 인생을 내가 들었으려 말해 지 뭐냐 자네에게 삼사라세야 되기 existence 참으로 띠무 댕진기 샹화제인 것이 통일도 다 띠무스는 짬미시바 머리버스는 짬미시바 지기다 여드 짬미시베다 가다 민지 여드가 대리 샹왕이 뭐 이나 다 기억입니다 와 다 대리 샹왕에 타야지 여드메디 다 타고 여드메시 아주 상당하래 다 타고 여시베 지다 시버코에 싸와 머리고 달라 니부 땀된 여바 니부 찌름 임바 땐데 저기 엔스템란 신지 여사와 임바 이리 야오 상당히 뭐 있나 가서서는 아직 당원에 전에 말하는 규기 뉴몬데 빵투버지 마주나 뉴몬가 잘해 개와지 마주나 당아 미끌 참아서 삼으시 삼으시 과야지 당아에 삼들은 거기도 여마 다 거기 여마 살살해 애니식 삼으시기도 와 다 될라 타버더니 인중사 뭐마 다 때리 인중데 다 되시죠 동해 시작하자, 군중 빵하자, 싹 군중 빵도 이걸로 쑥 침을 내는 데 있는 민중사바들 내송아. 대대지에게 다, 뉴무 뽕 쳐야지, 소소, 쇠로 튀치에 뽑아서 내는 데 안에 뉴무 빵도 차원건도 차삼에 고봉건도 잔들 내기도 와. 대대적인 고봉건도 잔들지, 다, 고봉이 영당 건드시면 이리 야오 시험이나, 에니, 인중 그 태권은 있어야 티, 다, 지, 태성 공순기, 탄에, 딘 떡을 줄 깨워지 마주나다 땅한 디마소 삼아지 아니 딘중 때 권한 일이야 아니 지금 생각 띵는 잡아시기도 와 나와 잡아서 오는 시리 아사디 아사디 가서 우주 신비 투병 것 가사 수수 깨워 주나 동반 이주나 나도 저도 가와야도 양도 저도 가와야 치면 밀리시 Luigi Boko, Don Yuba, Gaiba, Della Zoga, Sandy Loy, Savin, Tinino, Temin, Tain, Tell Tambetu, Temper, Temper, Sassanity, and it's Chigli was another, Tomani's Lives and Achi, that this ship will be somebody's Lives Ligua. Chalana, you know, Domin Shevacha, Unjum Pamacha, Gong Monducha, Lam Gombracha, since so that did it. That this event, the Udalea, Domin Shevacha, Domin Samolo, and I saw the Pigget Pansan. 동네 라르시로 시작하면 되고 정규 동등의 풍부지 세사소나 다 동네시로 시작하면 되고 동네시로 시작합니다 동네시로 시작합니다 정규 군중 라년부 땀쟁 깨니 머리가 싸우는 방법이 중수나 땅에를 다져볼 때 시작해요 유모 방법이 중수나 아니 차와 차버렸다 다져볼 차와 차와 사야 되네 이런 거냐 다네 다 니만은 이제 시작해요 Gobin's a toss on it, Nikin is with the Gismas, Tinir with the Tasan gave the year. Tinir with the other gave the year, the one that Tarang Gobin's a toss on it, one that ran any of the Tinir with the Samni, the Tanu. That the lady in the Sane, or that Casa Hanga Dishavat, Kagan. So the lady in the Kuzu ship, Kuzu Pons at the Pons Chami. Gobongo the Shadimon, Goboyo, Numbang, Tarang, Gobachimon, the Chester, Tamla, Gobongo the Shaki, Dua, Gobongo the Chami. Lam Gomni, Lam Gitreva Tarsin Susanne, Lam Gomachakin, the Dua. The Dusitana, and Dribit Shigare. Diane D. Tekonil Hajarina, Dinshi, Madame Maja, Kunzuranane, Dinshi Namsha Yore, Dambashi Yore. In a Yusu Dribit Dambayore, Dumi Dambasa Yore, the Shirusu Dumi Yore.
With that, actually, we earlier I mentioned understanding of the Four Noble Truths in terms of a basis and the path, and then the fruition of that path. So we have discussed how the understanding of the Four Noble Truths in terms of the basis so far. Now, with relation to the understanding of the Four Noble Truths in terms of the path, which is the actual application of that knowledge onto the path, here the first, of course, the crucial point is to cultivate the knowledge and insight into the nature of suffering. So here the Buddha pointed out that suffering must be recognized and its origin eliminated and the cessation actualized and the path must be cultivated. So this points out the actual implementation of the knowledge of the Four Noble Truths. So with relation to suffering, how do we cultivate a deeper insight into the nature of suffering? So with relation to the first level of suffering, which is the evident manifest suffering, even the animals do not need to be taught how to avoid suffering. Even the animals are capable of not desiring painful experiences. So it is, however, in the second level of suffering, which is suffering of change, here even we human beings need to train ourselves and learn to recognize its suffering nature, because conventionally we tend to identify many of these sufferings of change as pleasurable experiences. However, if you analyze deeply, not only are these sufferings and these experiences in the nature of suffering, they are potentially dissatisfying, because whatever the experience it may be, the more you indulge in it, the greater it has a tendency to lead to frustration or disappointment and dissatisfaction and so on. So with relation to the second level of suffering, we do need to cultivate how to understand it as being in the nature of suffering. However, it is in the third level of suffering which is the most important, which is the understanding of suffering of conditioning. So here, a deeper understanding of the meaning of suffering has to be cultivated. And as explained before, this is the understanding that our very samsaric existence itself constitutes a form of suffering. Because, as explained before, whatever the consequences, the fruits and the results are always under the power of its causes. And with relation to samsaric existence, we found out that the ultimate cause of the samsaric experience is the afflictions and particularly the fundamental ignorance. And given that fundamental ignorance is a distorted state of mind, so long as we remain under the power of this kind of distortion and the karmic actions they give rise to, there will be no room for genuine happiness. So, and also the very name of affliction itself conveys the idea of an inauspicious and unhealthy manner of being. The affliction conveys the notion of being afflicted, and the ignorance, the cause, which is the cause, also conveys a mortal being that is distorted. So long as we remain within the samsaric existence, under the power of such falsification and distortions, there will be no room for true and lasting happiness. So once you gain that kind of understanding, one needs to internalize that, and will then at that point a genuine wish to gain freedom from this kind of a conditioned existence will arise. And that genuine wish is referred to as the true renunciation. And this is very different from a fleeting, momentary motivation that you get as a result of some form of disappointment or disillusionment. Sometimes people abandon everything and then become deeply spiritual. The kind of motivation that is required in the context of a Buddhist practice is a sense of renunciation that is grounded upon a deep recognition that the samsaric existence is deeply unsatisfying, that there is one must find a way of getting freedom from this. So when you do that, you will also come to recognize that because underlying cause is this distortion caused by ignorance, therefore the way out must also involve cultivating the true insight into the ultimate nature of reality. Therefore, your wish to, your desire to understand, develop an understanding of the ultimate truth will become very powerful and deeply rooted. And therefore, you will engage in the pursuit of seeking an understanding of the ultimate nature of reality, the truth of the dependent origination. So when you gain that kind of aspiration to have the understanding of the truth of dependent origination, you will also come to recognize that the root of our samsara existence is this ignorance, the distorted state of mind. And since it is a distorted state of mind, and as explained before, there must exist, at least in principle, the possibility of cultivating an insight that will oppose this force and remove it and act as an antidote. So by cultivating that antidote, one can at least in principle envision the possibility of a true freedom. And this freedom is the nirvana, the liberation. And therefore a genuine wish to attain that freedom will arise. And also at that point, the understanding that the attainment of such freedom is also possible will arise. Therefore, one will be able to understand that cessation is something that needs to be cultivated within oneself. And because the path to that attainment of cessation is through the knowledge of the dependent origination, one will also appreciate that the true path is something that has to be cultivated and meditated upon. So on this basis, one will be able to understand how to integrate and apply the knowledge of the Four Noble Truths within one's own spiritual path. So with relation to this, I often find the statements in passages, verses in Panchen Lobsang Chökyen's writing quite poignant, where he makes the point that with relation to a wish to avoid suffering of evident painful experience are concerned, even the animals have that capacity. And with relation to the suffering of change, even the non-Buddhist traditions have means by which one can do that. So in the Buddhist context, the suffering that needs to be deeply understood and overcome is the suffering of conditioning. So it is in this manner one can internalize and apply the knowledge of the Four Noble Truths. And when you do that, you will then be able to understand the Buddha's statements about the fruition, where he says that suffering must be recognized, but there is no suffering to be recognized. Origin must be abandoned or eliminated, but there are no origins to be eliminated. So what he is pointing out here is that for a practitioner who has deeply understood the nature of suffering, as explained before, and has overcome that suffering, then since the cessation of suffering is a matter of bringing about a cessation of suffering within one's own mental continuum, then there will be no new sufferings arising in that individual. Therefore, there is no suffering to be recognized. Similarly, once you have gained the cessation, there will be no origin of sufferings arising in the individual. So there is no origin to be eliminated. And similarly, once you have gained the cessation, then there is no new cessation to be actualized. And similarly, once you have gained the state of liberation, then there is no new path that needs to be cultivated and practiced. Therefore, sometimes in the Buddhist text, the arahats, the one who has gained liberation from samsara, are sometimes referred to as the one who have completed his or her task. So in some sense, arhats, because there's nothing more to be done, so one has reached the end of the journey. So sometimes arhats are referred to as the one who has completed in his or her task. However, the Buddha's statements about there being no sufferings to be recognized can also be understood from kind of the philosophical point of view, a perspective of emptiness. Here, what the Buddha is stating is that although in the conventional level, on the conventional level, there are sufferings and there are origins, but on the ultimate level, there are no intrinsically real sufferings, or there are no intrinsically real origins of suffering. So one can also understand the Buddha's statements in that sense as well.
Can you
So when you this has to go slightly earlier. Sorry, when you gain a deeper recognition of the significance and the importance of cultivating an insight into the ultimate nature of reality, how that is directly related to one's own quest for freedom from suffering. And then you will find statements such as in Chandrakirti's text, which is at the opening lines of his sixth chapter of Supplement to the Middle Way, Madhyamaka Avatara, where he talks about how even while on the ordinary state, as someone who has deeply recognized the importance of emptiness, when you listen to the teachings on emptiness, your bodily hairs, the hairs of your bodily pores will stand up, tears will flow from your eyes, and so on. And these statements, if you have a deep understanding, then these statements will really resonate in you, and you will be able to relate to such statements.
真的到, I think the last 2,500 years of the Buddhist tradition, I think there are two major traditions, one Pali tradition, one Sanskrit tradition. I think Tibetan tradition, I think based on both Pali tradition as well as the Sanskrit tradition, because all the major texts which we learned, I think my own case and many of these, you see, the Kishis, you see, when they were small, we learned by heart some of these root texts. So at that time, you see, we have no interest, in my own case, no interest to learn these things. but like the chair.
Like a burden, like a chore.
I think some of them also, I think, the same experience. you know, when I learned these things by heart, my tutor kept one whip beside him rest. When I start to study or to learn by heart without explanation at that time, of course, too young. So myself and my elder brother, we together, So there are two whips. One whip, one yellow one. That is for me. So color is beautiful, yellow, but still whip. If that use is it, pain must cover. Anyway, so we learned by heart. You see, these root text, all these root text wrote by Nalanda master. Then later, explanation or study, different commentary, most of them wrote by Nalanda masters. So it is true to say, I mean, it is called the reasonable, right? Reasonable to say our tradition is Nalanda tradition. So sometimes I really feel a little proud. Now we are the holder of Nalanda tradition. In India, no longer. The Nalanda monastic institute itself are completely ruined now. But fortunately, we Tibetan, behind the Himalaya, last 1,000 years, we kept that spirit. So, Chazangadi, Taisa saved the Walia, Lodon saved the Tilukara Kaushan, Tiluki Majudi, that's something different, Disha something.
So the hardships that I experienced under the power of that yellow whip in Tibet at that time, although at that time it was quite tough. But now looking back,
because of the incident, right? While I learned by heart, it's one page, one word, very difficult to learn by heart. So then I lost my temper. I scratch, right? Scratch. That <one. laughs> So you look, what kind of stupid student, right? Oh, yeah.
So although the memorization of this text under the shadow of this yellow whip at that time was not an easy one, but looking back, I feel grateful and see the benefits this has on me.
And then among the Nalanda masters, of course, we consider the top most important text is Nagarjuna's text. That's top most important. Yeah, yata. So that is then I think Nagarjuna the Namjua and the Kasuri Tempership and Pali tradition to Tempations and Pages, Tempany Dajana Yomari. Sanskrit Tane Havatan Nagarjuna that the Shekin is an Tashab Nalalia, Sanja Namji Church, but Tempanyli and that Jigsun Temba, the Tempetan, you Temba Wars, Sanja Church, Tanshi, Jesus, someone, Tempanyli, then Sunyar is Sundua, but the Hundred Shuadi. Tinshi Namsha, Yawd Shivala.
So, within the two major Buddhist traditions that I mentioned, the Pali tradition and the Sanskrit tradition, in the Pali tradition, although there is extensive discussion of the Four Noble Truths, but generally the teachings of the Four Noble Truths are not related to the teachings of the Two Truths, whereas in the Sanskrit tradition, and particularly in Nagarjuna's writings, the understanding of the Four Noble Truths are directly related to the teachings on the two truths. This is why I have presented the understanding of the two truths in my presentation, the conventional and the ultimate truth. Nagarjuna writes that whatever the Buddha has taught, he taught so in terms of the two truths, and these are the ultimate level of truth and the conventional.
So that is the introduction of Buddha Dharma. General. Now, time for stomach. Thank you.